It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. With nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
I hope you're looking for them, because they're going to tell you something. They're going to tell you something really important about where you are and about what the season is and about what you should be doing and what you should be expecting. And I'm talking about, if you're down on the coast, it's the white pelicans. They're starting to come in. I'm interested if anybody's already seen a few. They are moving in. They're moving in for the winter here. That's not the right way to say it. They're moving in for the cool season, which starts in October, comes all the way, lasts all the way into, they'll be heading back up about April-ish. Back up into Canada to spend the summers there. Amazing birds, and they are a signal of the season. What is that season, folks? Hope you're ready for it. It's our fifth season of the year, depending on where you want to start. It's fall. And it starts about October 15th here along the Gulf Coast, and certainly in Alabama. Fall has already started. It's already begun in North Alabama. I think maybe it starts that last week in September is when we began to see fall in North Alabama. And there's sort of a transition throughout the state. But those are the dates you can be looking for. And it really is quite a big event that's about to happen. Really, really an amazing thing. The days are getting shorter. The nights are getting cooler, much cooler. Your tomatoes are going to recover. You know, there's another thing that's happening that you should be looking for, and that is the wildflowers. If you haven't been out mowing, if you haven't been mowing Alabama into oblivion, you're going to see the wildflowers. They're going to appear everywhere along the roadsides now. They're going to be blooming. The colors are going to be amazing. Purples and yellows of all types, incredible oranges, just beautiful colors of these fall wildflowers. And it's like they're rising up to meet the butterflies. And I don't know where the butterflies come from. We might have had a bad year for butterflies early on, but I can tell you right now the butterflies are everywhere. It's an amazing spectacle. The color of the butterflies, the color of the flowers there coming to meet, the flowers coming to meet the butterflies, just a really great season of the year. And it's a signal to you. It's a signal to you that you need to be working on things. You know, I do everything I can to encourage you to think about planting seeds, and I hope you have. You still have a little bit of time if you're on the Gulf Coast to plant some seeds. But this is the time for seed gatherers. And I've been a seed gatherer. I've been out gathering seeds everywhere I can find them. The seeds that I know will do best. The seeds that will be best for what I need. The seeds that might be good to eat if I can grow them out. The wild seeds that are growing along the roadsides. The wild seeds that are growing in the woods and the swamps. The great grasses. The wonderful shellbark hickories, all the other really delicious hickories, Quercus macheoii, the great beautiful swamp white oak with its beautiful, beautiful bark and beautiful canopy, great wood, basket oak, cow oak, my dad called it, gathering seeds, seed gathering time. It's time to do that. It's time to start thinking about that and get ready for it. So we're going to talk a little bit about seed gathering this morning. We're also going to be talking with John Olive, who'll be calling in later this morning, because the fall plant sale of the Mobile Botanical Gardens is coming up in mid-October, as it should be. And why is there a fall plant sale? Because fall is the time for planting, folks. It is the time for planting. It's not spring. Spring is probably, particularly along the Gulf Coast, is certainly the worst time for planting almost everything. Virtually everything. It's very difficult to get most trees, lawns, everything else to grow well when planted in spring. And we can talk about why that is. It's about partly about your perceptions of when spring starts, but it's mostly about you got summer staring you in the face. And right now, we've got this really wonderful, mild October, November, fall season lasts into the middle of December. If you're on the Gulf Coast, lasts until the middle of November. If you're in North Alabama, a really mild season. And then we have winter, which here is incredibly wonderful, incredibly mild for most of the year. And plants actually just snuggle in. It's the perfect time. So we're going to talk about planting. We're going to talk about seed gathering. We're going to talk about how to find those seeds, what to look for. We're going to talk about how to process them if we have time, how to get them ready to go and get ready to plant, how I'm planting. In fact, I'm studying up today, just looking at some of all the different kinds of things. I got these beautiful big shellbark nuts. Ooh, what a great tree, shellbark hickory. What a wonderful tree, and I need to get them germinated, and I don't want the worms to eat them up, so what am I doing? I'm figuring that out, getting ready to sow them, and I know they'll need a little bit of winter chilling to germinate, but they'll germinate again, and they'll germinate in spring. It's going to be good, and then we can spread these shellbark hickories around. They've become kind of rare now, and they're beautiful trees. The king nut is what a lot of people call them, the biggest nut of all the hickories, massive, and really quite delicious, quite sweet. Not any sweeter than, say, the other shagbark hickories, but also very good. Very good stuff. So we got lots to talk about this morning, and I hope you're paying attention. We're going to talk a little bit, too, about lawns, because I always feel guilty that I can't change the way the world is. So we're going to talk about your lawns and how to think about them. I wrote an email to a fella this past week. I hope it was all right. But we're going to talk a little bit about lawns and how to deal with them. And this is the time of year. Never spend too much time talking about lawns. That's a rule of mine. It should be a rule of yours. But if we're going to talk about them, this is the time of year we need to talk about them. So we're going to talk about that too. And then David Hubble is going to talk about Melaton. And we probably won't have time to call in today, but we're going to be talking in the next few weeks as the Melaton develop. Great fruit for the Gulf Coast. It's going to be great weather for Melatons too. And I'm anxious now. My broccoli's starting to come on. It's looking pretty good. The cabbages are getting pretty good. I'm going to miss the basil when the first frost hits, but man, I've got parsley coming on. It's going to last me all winter long. It's all very good. The kale is looking fine. I've done some things to protect my broccoli. We can talk about that in case you've planted it and you're wondering what to do about the bugs this time of year. We got a lot of stuff happening. It's a great time. And how do we know it's a great time? Because the white pelicans. That is your signal of the season, folks. The white pelicans are coming in. You might even look for them on the lakes up around Gunnersville. They may actually drop down shortstop a little bit up there before they head back to the coast, which is where most of them will be. A great signal that we're coming into the cool season, that things are about to change. Really cool. So give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. Give us a call. We'll talk about it. We've got several questions already. So Good morning.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch. Ask Bill about gardening and nature in your backyard. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk
106.5. All right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It is an Alabama Sunday morning. It's a Mississippi Sunday morning. It's a Georgia Sunday morning. It's a Northwest Florida Sunday morning. We get listeners from all those places. Good when they can join us. It's really about this region, about this place, which has a very distinctive seasons, and the seasons are changing now. I've noticed that the idea that we don't all have European seasons is catching on at least a little bit with gardeners in other parts of the country. And it's really, really good to know. I mean, if you're still out there talking about spring, summer, fall, winter, whatever, you're basically thinking like you're born in Austria, which is a fine place to be born, I reckon, and a good place to live and all that. But that ain't where you are. We have very distinct seasons here. There's six of them. And if you're a gardener, you need to understand those seasons, because it's going to make all the difference in how you grow things. It's going to make all the difference in how you grow things and your success. So six seasons, three summers. That's where, and if you think about it, well, of course we would have three summers. Of course we would. Particularly along the Gulf Coast, where you get something like American summer, which is the typical, more like typical summer conditions in the heart of the country, in the central part of the country. I don't know if I want to call it the heart of the country, but the central part of the country. The part of the country that we think of as sort of typical. Ohio. Indiana. Those kinds of places. American summer is the season we have in Alabama that's most like that, and that runs from, the middle of April on the Gulf Coast to the middle part of June. It's when your tomatoes are going to do great. They're going to do wonderfully. And then we have Gulf summer, which is very distinct, runs from the middle of June to the middle of August. Rains every day. And right now, you're in that period of time that we call hurricane summer, and you can guess why it's called hurricane summer. It's very distinctive. It's the time of year when, if we get rainfall, it's usually associated with, particularly on the Gulf Coast, usually associated with tropical weather coming out of the Gulf, rather than sort of the everyday showers. So it can often be very dry if we don't have a lot of tropical weather. And it's kind of getting that way now. And then we have fall, October, when we begin to get the driest month, usually is October, throughout most of Alabama. But we'll begin to get those fronts coming in from the continent. And we'll begin to get some rains, which will increase in November and December, and then by the end of December, middle of December on the Gulf Coast, winter begins. Really starts about the middle of November farther north. These seasons, something to think about. And it's time to start thinking about your winter garden. In fact, it was time to start thinking about your winter garden back in August. You have a little bit of time left if you're living on the Gulf Coast. If you're living farther north, you still have time to plant. you probably don't have as much time to plant seeds. If you're in Birmingham, you may be able to get your radishes from seeds at this point. You'll probably need plants. You might have to go to the, you know, the big infernal store to get them. Or maybe you've got a local nursery that sells them. I hope you do. And you can get them from there. But it's time to start planting. The days are cooling off. For those of you in the Huntsville area, it's time to start watching the cabbages form. It's already going to be that time. We're going to talk a little bit, and don't let me forget, you call me and ask me if you've had problems with your vegetables. We're going to talk a bit today about how to protect those vegetables, how to get them through these winter vegetables, how to get them through the problems associated with bugs this time of year. And that's one of the issues, because we've had a whole year of bug buildup. And they're still out there. They're going to fly less and less. There are going to be fewer and fewer of them as fall wears on, as fall develops. But they're going to be an initial problem. And what do you do about them? Well, we can talk about it. There's some pretty good solutions for this time of year, and I'm really happy with them. It's making my broccoli look good, so we're going to talk about those this morning. And at long last, we do need to talk about lawns. And I think I'm going to launch into that a little later in the morning. I want to get John Olive on very soon, and we're going to talk about what's available at the fall plant sale at the Mobile Botanical Gardens, because it will be time to plant. So we'll do that. What kind of questions? What kind of zoysia grass to plant? What kind of snake has a brown and black head? So it's hard to know. If it was a small little snake, little bitty snake, and it was in your yard and you're in Mobile or in Mobile County or Fairhope in one of the suburban or urban areas where there's lots of development or where there's even a little new development, more than likely that snake is just Steraria decayi. What are some common names for it? Brown snake. Does that work? Midland brown snake. There's all sorts of legends about them because people are totally irrationally bizarre about snakes because they were taught to be totally irrationally bizarre about snakes. It's like we're taught many irrationally bizarre things. It's too bad we can't overcome them, but it's a non-poisonous snake. Some local people call it ground rattler. And so it's always fun when somebody says, "Oh man, that's a ground rattler," to pick the little snake up and let it twine around your fingers. And people will think you're some kind of miraculous, oh, I don't know, demon or saint or something. Just a little brown Midland snake. Brown snake with a little dark head. I think that's probably what you're looking at. What kind of zoysia grass to plant? Oh, dear. We're going to talk about that when we get to grass this morning, when we get to lawns. I hate to call it, you know, I hate to say we're talking about grass, because if I were talking about grass, you know I'd be talking about all the really fun things that I'm out collecting right now, like little blue stem grass and Indian grass and good old Muhlenbergia, big old pink plume grasses, the Aragrosta spectabilis, the big purple spectacle grass. I don't know what the common name ought to be. And of course we got the big Arianthus, all those big beautiful plume grasses, sugarcane plume grass. That's what we really ought to talk about when we talk about grass. But instead you want to talk about what we put in our lawns, and that's relatively few grasses, 4 or 5 grasses, none of which will ever be very satisfying. But we're going to talk about those varieties just because it's an obligation I have to do. And we'll talk about those later this morning, probably after 10 o'clock, and some of the varieties of zoysia You always want to plant a grass variety that is going to be as high as you can keep it, and we'll talk about that, but we're not going to get started now. What else we got? David's going to try to call about Marathon in a couple of weeks. This is the time of year that the cool weather really encourages flowering in the Marathon and the shorter days. You know, it's not just that the weather's getting cooler. It's that the days, you know, are getting shorter. Oh, man, I got so much to do, and the days are just not long enough.
I am a poor wayfaring stranger, traveling through this world alone. There is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land.
FM Talk 106.5 with Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Call 251-343-0106. Here again is your personal nature expert, Bill Finch.
Yeah, all right, here we go. What we got? Great question here about a wild grape. I'm thinking about this, Amy. I found a wild grape growing over a road, and it looks like the lot's about to be cleared, and we'll lose the wild grape. I don't know whether the wild grape is a muscadine or a true grape. Muscadines are now in a different genus. What is it? Muscadinia, I think it is. And grapes are in another genus, Vitis. However you want to say it. But they're both pretty cool. So I think muscadines have a single tendril is one way to tell. But there are other ways to tell as well. If it's a really big, fat fruit, more than likely it's a muscadine. So how do you propagate it? It is not easy. You can't get, the leaves are not going to do it. You can try it from seeds, and the seeds will take a while. That's the problem. You can graft, but this is not probably not the best time to graft, and you'd have to have another plant ready to do it. So it's going to be tricky to do that. I don't really know that there's a practical way to do it right now except to dig up the plant, and that will be a booger of a chore, if I may say that out loud. I don't really, I'm thinking about it. I'll think if there's another way to do this, but I don't think it's going to be easy. And it's too bad. Certainly saving the seeds from the grapes can help. Of course, what's going to happen is, or the muscadine, you're more than likely going to end up with male and female, some of which the males may not be good, and it could take you a while before they actually produce fruit. But it's how we used to do it, and there are ways to speed that up just a little bit. We can certainly try. All right. Don has got a load of questions. Don, I'm going to try to get to the ball. I don't know. I don't want to start at the end or at the beginning. So Don's asking about, so we got tomatoes, and this is great. So what are we doing here? We got stink bugs. And Don's growing a smaller fruited tomato. And so he can't cover each individual tomato, which is what I suggest people do. If you really consider those tomatoes precious and you've got some big tomatoes, you can take those little organza bags like they use at weddings. And they're cheap, and they last forever. And you can cover your tomatoes with those little organza bags. Just tie a little knot on the end of them. It's really simple, and you won't have the stink bug issue. If you've got lots of small tomatoes, you got another strategy. And the strategy is you got lots of small tomatoes. And that's really cool because you say, okay, all right, I'm not too jealous. I got so many small tomatoes, I'm not going to eat them all. And I don't need to eat them all. And so if I get half of these small tomatoes, I'm going to have so many tomatoes that I am going to be full of tomatoes. I'm going to have plenty of tomato. In fact, you know, we have tomatoes, smaller fruited tomatoes, that are so prolific that I'm ashamed because we never, ever, ever harvest more than half of those tomatoes. And so if the stink bugs get some of them, I don't care. They're part of the half that we don't harvest, and I'll still have plenty. So that's the other strategy. And Don, it looks like you're already barking up the right tree in a way, because I see you've got lots of small tomatoes, and they look pretty good. Will the tomatoes that show some damage from stink bugs be still good to eat? Yes. Sometimes they go bad a little more quickly. Yeah, and sometimes they go bad a little more quickly. So it's good to share. Don says, well, I'm sharing them with my coworkers, and yes, and you're also sharing them with the stink bugs, and that may not be something you'll ever be able to totally avoid. Is there a repellent for stink bugs? Don, if you come up with a repellent for stink bug that really works, you let me know. We're going to go in business together. We're going to make a good bit of money, Don. Just let me know when you find it. I haven't found it. Stink bugs are one of the bigger issues, and it's something you have to plan around. We have our big leaf-footed bugs. I think they're becoming more common as an issue. I don't see that people were complaining about them as much. I kind of have a feeling I understand why. I think they're building up on, you know, they're building up in thickets and woods and other things, and I don't know. But we got more of them now than we used to. And so they are a problem, and we don't really have any great solutions. You can spray the stew out of your tomatoes, but the stink bugs are only there briefly, and then they fly away, right? So it doesn't really work. It doesn't really work to do that. So the secret is for tomatoes and other things that are very vulnerable is to grow something that's prolific enough that you don't mind the loss. Okay. Next year I'm going to cover them with fine mesh netting, and that works too. Yeah, that works great, and that's something we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about that soon. Phil, I think, is telling me I have a caller. I'm trying to look to see if I know more about it. Here we go. Mary, I'm listening. What's going on?
A few Mary, oranges on it, but a number of them, not a great number, but several, have split and fallen. What's caused that, and how can I prevent it again?
Huh. So did you have, was it very dry and then we had a big rainfall event? Maybe in your yard?
Yeah. Yes.
So there it is. You can't prevent that very well. Sometimes that will happen, after we get these big rainfall events, after a long period of dryness, you'll get split fruits as they develop.
I guess I might be looking for it again, since that's what we've got, rain coming and then dry.
Well, yes, it usually is. Usually won't happen. It's pretty rare that it gets dry enough that it will bother the orange, but it did, and it. And then just a big glump of rain can actually cause that splitting to occur. I don't think it'll happen again. I think you'll probably be all right. This rain will probably, the last rain we had will probably carry you into fall pretty well. And then there's less moisture stress, and I don't think you're going to see that again. But Mary, I don't think there's any way to prevent it easily at this point.
Okay, well, just a few fell, and then the rest of the tree is fine.
Yeah, so you're in good shape. And Mary, do this. Send me a picture. Can you text me a picture of the fruits that split, and let me take a look at them just to make sure.
Yes, I can if there's some out there this time. I would do that.
Yeah, and that would be. But I'm pretty sure it's just the rainfall thing, and it's really nice that it only happened to a few fruits. It happens to a lot of fruiting plants. When it gets a little dry and then suddenly it rains, it even happens to tomatoes. Essentially, the tomatoes split and they take on all that extra moisture very rapidly and they can't accommodate it. The skin doesn't stretch quick enough and boom, there it goes. So it happens quite a bit with various fruits, particularly the softer fruits.
Okay, I'll look into that. Thank you.
All right, Mary. Good to hear from you. Let's see. Grace, I'm listening. Tell me what's up.
Okay. My daughter has an old camellia bush. We don't even know how old. She bought a property, okay? And there are, you know, the big pods that they make anyway. And she wanted me to try to plant some seeds and see what we can just kind of messing around with it, okay? So I have no idea what to do here.
Yeah, so you never know what you're going to get. You have no idea. It's not going to look like the mama plant at all. There's a small chance it could be better than the mama plant in terms of its flower. It could be better than its mama plant in terms of its ability to thrive, even though flower's not very pretty, or it could be lots of things. So you never know.
Right.
But the fruit, the capsule actually has more than one seed in it. So
okay.
The capsule will dry. It'll break open. You'll have, I think maybe two or three seeds in there.
Yes.
And you can just plant those seeds. They don't need winter chilling. They just need to be put in a moist situation.
Okay.
And it's probably just fine to put them in a pot. Just put them in good container soil, whatever you can find, and mm-hmm. and not too big a pot. And then put them on the east side of your house. And let them germinate there. I suggest that so that the pot doesn't get too cold from the northwest winds. And just let them germinate outside. And make sure that they don't dry out really badly. You'll have to water them occasionally, but you won't have to water them much. Don't put them right under the eaves so that because the water will pelt them as they're coming up. But do that, and I think they'll germinate. A percentage of them will germinate, and you'll get. And then in about 10 or 15 or 20 years, you'll be able to see what you got.
Well, my daughter can see what she's got.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's fun in the meantime, right? So that's it.
Yeah, it's just a fun project. But now, I actually right now, I have them on, I've met all the things that you have said, because I'm going to get some more because she had some more pots. So we're just doing a bunch because we don't know whether any of them will come up or want to come up or whatever. But I've got them. I do have them. But I have a east wind window in my garage. This is where I bring a lot of my plants in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Are you still there? Okay. Okay.
The music is marching us. But hold on, right, and we'll come right back, okay?
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You can take all the tea in China. Put it in a big brown bag for me. Sail right around.
FM Talk 106.5, home for plain living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106.
Oh boy, Don, yeah, we're going to talk about goldenrod. We're going to talk about bees. Don't let me forget to talk about Goldenrod, Don. I hope we're going to have time. If we don't talk about it this week, let's talk about it next week. Just a lot of things going on. Clay sent me some beautiful pictures of tomatoes that he had on organza bags. And it does really well if you've got a stink bug problem. B-Dark says 7-Duster works on stink bugs. And I'll say, my dad used to have an expression. You know how to catch a bird? He'd say to me, sprinkle salt on his tail. I'll let you think about that one. But it's kind of the same problem with stink bugs is, you know, yeah, if you can sprinkle salt on his tail, you're going to catch the bird. So there it is. It's they move in and out, and that's one of the problems with stink bugs. And they don't, you know, they can move in from other plants. 7-Dust is not something I would recommend, and you might do a little looking on it. It's not one of the worst, but it's probably not one of the best things for you either. And it sticks around while you eat it, and that's one of my problems with 7-Dust, is it doesn't break down very easily. But it's the sprinkling salt on the tail that I want to emphasize here. Catch a bird, sprinkle salt on his tail, my daddy would say. There's a lesson in those old Mississippi stories. So let's get back to Grace. Grace, you asked me about something. You were talking about pots on your windowsill. Can we go back to that?
Well, it's actually in my garage, okay? And the reason I was thinking about leaving, my garage goes down, usually does not go below 50 degrees during the wintertime. So I kind of keep my plants, some of my tropical-type plants in there or whatever. And I was thinking about leaving them in there on the, I've got a shelf there. And or would it be better to put them outside so they can have a little, the camellia seeds could have a little more?
I think that's a fine place. I don't think there's any the winter chilling requirements would be very small for that, and I will look that up, but I don't think there's any winter chilling requirements at all. I think they'll work fine in the garage. The garage will probably be a kind of a perfect place for them. And that sounds good. And you'll have them there. You'll water them. You'll pay attention to them. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, that's the reason. Yeah. And so you have any idea what the germination period is on it? Next spring, is it one of these things?
I think it's going to wait till next spring to germinate. It'll probably germinate next spring.
That's what I was thinking too. Okay. All right. Real good. And thank you so much.
All right. You're welcome.
Okay.
Keith, you're somehow surprised by Mississippi. There you go. I've known Agricola probably longer than you have. So that's the story. So what else we got? Maybe I deal with Don's. Don is talking about some honey at Mayor Park that's out of the Delta. Delta Gold honey. I don't know about it, but I love honey. And I think honey does really cool things. I want to clarify something about goldenrods. And Don, don't get upset with me about this. But goldenrod doesn't give you allergies. And here's the reason why. Goldenrod showy plant, right? It's very showy. It's got those big yellow flowers. And why does it have big yellow flowers? Well, it's to be attractive to something, not people, but to insects who will come and grab the pollen and take it to another plant. So that pollen never gets windborne. Its only way, I guess you could develop an allergy if the insect carrying the pollen flew up your nose. Ooh, which happened to me the other day. It's amazing that doesn't happen more often. But that doesn't really cause an allergy. It just kind of irritates the inside of your nose. So it's the pollen isn't, it doesn't fly around. Oak pollen, on the other hand, flies around because there's, you don't see those oak flowers, do you? You don't notice them. And in theory, ragweed is another thing that happens this time of year, and the pollen flies around. And grasses are a big deal. They're a big deal when they flower. Usually it's a little earlier, and it's not the grasses so much, but there are other things that are producing pollen, usually in September. We're getting to the stage where not many things are going to be producing pollen anymore. They're done. Even the ragweeds, the big giant ragweeds, which are said to be cause allergies, they're pretty much done now. So it's interesting, but if you're getting allergies while the goldenrod's blooming, the one thing I can tell you is it's not the goldenrod that's to blame. It's just that you notice the goldenrod because it's big and showy and purdy, right? And you don't notice the other plants that are windborne, which aren't big and showy and pretty. They don't have big, showy, pretty flowers because they don't need big, showy, pretty flowers because the wind blows them around and that pollen is very small and it flies around and it goes straight up your nose. And a lot of those actually have, they actually send out little chemical signals to your nose saying, am I in the right place? And your nose says, no. And that little dialogue can sometimes actually lead to allergies. So that's my story. And it's good to remember. It's good to remember. C.B. Carl says, honeybees can take the seven dust back to their hives, and it can cause real problems there. I think that's probably the case, and certainly neonicotinoids, I can't remember how many consonants it's got in it, but they are certainly a big problems too for honeybees. So you do want to be careful about that kind of thing. Seven is particularly a problem because it does last a while, but whether I think you'd have to cover everything in your garden with it to really be effective against the stink bugs, but I would say be careful about seven dust. Be careful about it. And we're going to come back. I hope we're going to talk a little bit more about how to protect your plants, because it's a big thing, and I'm throwing obstacles in B-Dark's way. And so she's going to want me to say a little more about it. And we're going to try to do that in our next hour. John is coming up, and I think he's coming up in the next hour, John Olive. And we're going to talk about the fall plant sale. We're going to talk about that a lot. And then in that last little segment, we're going to talk about lawns. Last 30 minutes or so, we're going to talk about lawns.
It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
All right. We're back. We got a lot going on this morning. A lot to talk about. More than I'm going to have time to talk about all of it. But we got one really important thing to talk about, and that's the Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale, which is coming up very soon, and I'm going to let John say so I don't get it wrong, when it is, it's a mid-October kind of thing. And John Olive is with us. Some of you are familiar with John at this point. John is John worked for Auburn for years and years. He consulted with growers locally on how best to grow plants, how to avoid disease and insect problems. He worked at the field station next to the botanical gardens. John and I have talked a lot over the years, and occasionally we agree. Is that right, John?
That is correct.
So it's great to have John with us. John is retired, sort of, but he's doing work with the Mobile Botanical Gardens and does every year helping them get set up for this fall plant sale. John, the first big question is, when is this thing, so I don't get it wrong?
Okay. The sale is this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And so it's right upon us already. And on Thursday, we're having a little bit different hours this year to try to shake things up and try things different for the Thursday night. We're not having a ticketed event, so you can come to this one starting at 1 p.m. We're opening earlier on Thursday for people, and so we won't have a big rush late in the evening. But if you want to get there early, that's the time to come. 1 p.m. on Thursday, and we'll go till 7. But we do have some activities that night to try to make it interesting and give it a good atmosphere. And we've got live music from 4 to 7. We've got food truck. I think it's Soul Heaven. Food truck is going to be there. And we're going to have a beer and wine bar. As I understand it, the wine bar and beer bar is you can buy individual drinks, or you can get a wristband and have an open bar. But that is the Thursday night. Then Friday and Saturday, it's going to be 9 to 4 both days.
Good. Thank you, John, because I wouldn't have gotten that right at all.
Well, say I have it again. To write it down.
Yes, so we're gonna get that. John, let's not forget to go over that again before we end this conversation. But the fall plant sale, it's really important for gardeners. The spring plant sale is good for people who aren't really gardeners because they think that everything gets planted in spring. But as a matter of fact, here on the Gulf Coast, almost everything does better when planted in fall. And so it's really great if you want shrubs and trees and all these other things. John, let's talk about some of the kinds of things that are available this year for the sale. Have you got a good sense of that yet?
I sure do. And let me mention, you can go to the Mobile Botanical Gardens website, and they have a couple of lists printed on the website. And you can download those and look at them on your computer. You can make a copy. I think they have several formats. People have had trouble sometimes downloading in the past, but I think they've got that figured out. And there's a couple of formats of the list. And so they've got the complete up-to-date. Let me warn you, though, as you know, when there's a magnitude of this number of plants, sometimes we ordered the plants and they may not come in on the truck and they still end up on the list, but we've gotten better and better about that. And so most of those plants are going to be available at 1 p.m. on Thursday. I can't guarantee you they'll be available at 2 p.m. on Thursday, but most of those plants, and you can see how many there are. So that's a good thing to do, is go to the list.
Right. But
one of the exciting things that we got this year, let me just start, and you can interrupt me, and you can focus on some of the things you want to talk about. But one of the things, we got some Japanese maples in, a really nice selection of 3-gallon Japanese maples in at the last minute that we didn't know we were going to have. And these are not a lot of each variety. There's a lot of times it's just one plant, but they really have some nice form. I was really impressed unloading them off the truck with the form that they have starting. You know, it takes them a long time to grow, and they're slow growing, but they've got that form that they need to really make a specimen plant in your garden. So if you're looking for a nice Japanese maple, we've got a good selection of those this year.
Is that from – where'd they come from?
You know where they came from.
Okay, yeah, that's why I was asking. So so I could tell you a little bit about these. So this is – This is Martin van der Giessen's private collection, and he's been working on these for a long time, really some great Japanese maples. Martin is one of the great plants people of the United States. He's very well known, and he's done a great job collecting plants. Martin is going to join John here pretty soon, I hear. And in that blissful state, and these are really great maples. You will never have a chance to get these again. I can just tell you, there's a lot of these varieties that will never ever be available to you again. And what a rare opportunity! And they can be very beautiful. Some of them may be a little temperamental. You want to be careful with them. I wouldn't just throw them out. You want to plant them well. John, any advice on that? Just lots of organic matter. Make sure the soil is well drained. And anything else, John, we need to say about those?
And it's my experience that you really need to protect them from the late afternoon and mid-afternoon sun. They really benefit from shade, and a lot of these in Mobile, they're not going to look great this time of year. You know, this, in your yard, even when they're thriving, they're about done. You know, in my experience, by this time of year. But what you mentioned, well drained, good organic matter, and take care of it that first year. You plant it really good, and the sun is usually the detriment of them to me. You comment now. See if we agree.
Yeah, we agree, and so we completely agree. And the sun moves in the sky a lot, and plants are green for a reason. They need sunlight. They have to have sunlight, and so you gotta compromise with those two thoughts in mind. And what that means is, morning sun is really great for these guys, and sun up until about 11 o'clock, they're very efficient at processing. Sunlight after 11 o'clock during summer is can be very difficult for them, and so you want to minimize the amount of sunlight they get. You know, ideally for all plants, you would actually in midsummer, you would probably intercept that 11 o'clock to 2 o'clock sunlight, because they're not using it very efficiently, and it can be very damaging. But so you want good morning sunlight on these guys. But they're beautiful things. John, let's move on to something else. What else you got?
As usual, we've got the usual suspects of evergreen azaleas and deciduous azaleas. And we try to focus on the smaller varieties, the satsukis. And that's another plant that we're going to try to start growing ourselves, because Martin was a good supplier of those unusual satsukis that are rebloomers and so popular and fit into a smaller landscape. And so we're going to have those at the sale, and hopefully continue to have them.
Yeah, boy, I'd love to talk about satsukis. We're going to take a break. We're going to be right back. And again, just your last chance on a lot of those satsukis, I expect. But we'll be right back.
Me and my best friend Lillian and her blue tick hound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played.
FM Talk 106.5, home for plain living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106.
All right, let me run through some business real quick. Don, you call me and let's talk about allergens here at another time, because we got a lot to talk about this morning. I won't get to it, but you call me. Let's talk about it. We'll try to clarify that a little better. I got a question here from Josh. Is it a good time to plant rosemary? Yes, it is. If you're on the Gulf Coast, it's a great time. If you're farther north, I would wait a little while to plant rosemary. You shouldn't have any problems here. In fact, the fact that it's a little drier may actually be somewhat of a help. Somebody's got a Christmas cactus I've had for 19 years. It's looking a little bad in the center. Needs to be repotted. I can tell. Ooh, it looks like you respond to me by text and tell me if you've already repotted it recently. But I think it needs to be repotted. And we'll talk about what kind of soil that is if you'll call me next week, and we'll try to figure that out. John?
Yes, sir.
We are talking about the Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale, and this is a good time for you to rehearse the dates for this thing. Let's keep telling folks so they get there at the right time. Let's talk about this sale. It's coming up next week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And
this coming
let's
up
talk
Thursday
about
now. That's the, let's say, the 9th, 10th, and 11th, I believe. So
right.
This weekend, a week from, well, next weekend, right. But it's right. Thursday at 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. We open at 1 p.m. On Friday, we open at 9, and Saturday, we open at 9, and we're open till 4 on those 2 days.
Good. That was good. And that's very clear, and I understand that perfectly. So we've also got some food and other stuff coming on Thursday night. Up until, yeah. So this is very good. So John and I were talking about some of the things that are available, and there's some incredible things. I wish I had room for it. I wish I had room for it. Some incredible things from our good friend Martin Vander Giesen, and you have no idea how good those things are. But some of them, we have some maples, some Japanese maples that Martin has been collecting. I know they're fabulous. I've seen some of them. They're really gorgeous. They take a little more work, but they're really beautiful, and they will be for sale. And then we had just gotten into the realm of the Satsuki azaleas. And so, you know, at one point we envisioned Mobile was going to be sort of the azalea capital of the world. It almost was at one point. And then people kind of just, I don't know, started flying planes or whatever people did.
Yeah.
And so we lost it. But one of the great, but we still, you can have your yard be the azalea capital of the world with some of these incredible plants. These Satsukis are incredible. They're very small plants. They're very small azaleas. Unlike, almost all of them are very small. Unlike the big Southern Indian azaleas, which are also very, very good for your yard, but very large. These Satsukis are very small, but more importantly, they're artists. They're like paintings, and they were designed by Japanese royalty, for lack of a better term, Japanese aristocrats, to look like paintings, and it's just absolutely gorgeous what each flower can be, and sometimes each flower is a little different. These are incredible plants, and they're great for yards. If in West Mobile, I find they do very well. In downtown Mobile, you're going to need lots and lots of organic matter to build it up. They don't seem to like the silty soils very well, but they do very, very well throughout Mobile with the proper preparation, and they're absolutely stunningly gorgeous. John, have I missed anything on these Satsukis?
Not a bit. I will add that there's some of them that people include with those Satsukis that are actually probably Robin Hill varieties that are real popular here. Conversation Piece and Astronaut, I think those are Robin Hills. But they're very similar, and they probably have lineage from the Satsukis. But they're small type of azaleas and very nice.
And Astronaut I love. I've always loved Astronaut. It's a terrible name for an azalea for some reason,
right,
but it's a great plant. And why in the world was it called Astronaut? It looks nothing like an astronaut. It's just a beautiful plant. But it's a great plan, and it is very Satsuki-like, even though it's a relatively modern hybrid, as you can tell by the name Astronaut. So, those are some really good azaleas. And John, what else we got?
Along with the evergreens, we've got the native or deciduous azaleas that, as your listeners know, fall is the time to plant them, so you can enjoy them. We sell more in the spring because people see those blooms and they got to have them, but if you plant them now, those blooms will be in your yard. And so we've got a really nice selection of those.
Yeah, so that's really cool. That's great. And so these are why our trees, John. Do we have many trees as well?
We do. We have a usual selection of the native oaks and magnolias and what we normally have. We're our supplier is getting to be a challenge coming from North Florida, but we are. We're growing a lot on our own, and we're finding some local. And so I think we've got a good selection of native and non-native trees.
And John, I want to really jump in here because this is really great that the Botanical Gardens has these things. And these are things that even the best local nurseries can't afford to have all of these varieties in stock all the time. And so the Botanical Gardens really offers you an opportunity to buy things that you just can't buy elsewhere. But let me, I want to put a plug in here, and I say this a lot. The Botanical Gardens, if you treat the Botanical Gardens as a kind of a passive thing, that you say, oh, I'm going to go down to the plant sale, and here's the problem. We're all going to have to cooperate with our local botanical gardens to make sure that these kinds of plants are available, because the nursery folks that used to grow these, they ain't in business anymore. The people who knew and loved plants, who really knew a wide variety of plants, let me put it that way, they ain't in business anymore. They're retired. They're mostly gone. The people that John worked for, they're mostly not in the business anymore, the people that I knew. And so a lot of these great plants for the Gulf Coast, they're going to be really hard to find because everybody's producing plants for Walmart. And Walmart doesn't care what you grow in your yard. They only care, you know, they're growing them for Home Depot. They're growing them for other places in the country, not for the Gulf Coast. So it's really, and that's a great business model. It's a great, well, it is a business model that works for some people. And so I don't begrudge that. But the problem is you're not going to have these plants for your yard if you don't start working with your local botanical gardens. And that means figuring out how to make sure that the botanical gardens themselves have some way of getting these plants or propagating these plants themselves. It's a tough thing. It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of cooperation, but I really encourage you to get involved with the Botanical Garden. Sorry for that plug, John. It's something we need to say repeatedly.
Well, let me change the list here and give you some of the variety of things. And I'm going to bullet point several of the things. I do listen to your show. Most of the time it's a podcast. I can't listen on Sunday, but I do listen to a little bit of what you say, and so I'm gonna touch on some of the plants that you often talk about and mention. Vegetables. In the vegetable, we can't grow a whole lot of vegetables, but we're growing collards, and we're growing the Georgia green, the Alabama blue, and the yellow cabbage collards that you've talked about, as well as the sprouting broccolis, DeCiccio and Calabrese.
Great, and that's really wonderful. It's timely. It's the great time to put them in on the Gulf Coast. Those are great plants. The yellow cabbage collards, I really like. It's, you know, almost use it. I actually use them in salads. And you can cook them, but you don't need to cook them long because they're very tender, and they have a great flavor. They have that cabbage flavor, and they add it to the salads, but it's not overwhelming. It's really quite delicious. So good. And Alabama blue, I haven't grown that one as much as John may have. We're going to be back here in just a minute. John, can you hang on?
Sure.
We're going to be back.
Well, I can't hunt, and I can't fish, but but I can drive you crazy, yes I can. Well, I can't even make a dish, but I can drive you crazy, yes I can.
Ooh. FM Talk 106.5 with Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Call 251-343-0106. Here again is your personal nature expert, Bill Finch.
Yeah, and John Olive, who's great to have him on, as always, with the Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale, which runs Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I can almost remember the times myself, John, but I'm going to let you say them. On Thursday, the show opens at, what did you say, 2 o'clock?
1 p.m. 1 p.m.
1 p.m. 1 to 7 on that's right. I remember your comment now. You can guarantee what's there at 1, but not what's there at 2. So
two, yeah.
That's where I got to 2 o'clock.
Right.
So 1 to 7 on Thursdays, and then from 9 until
4
on Friday and Saturday. So this is good. Mobile Botanical Gardens, y'all know where it is. It's kind of out towards Spring Hill. It's in Municipal Park, on the edge of Municipal Park there in Mobile. A great place to visit. You can see the longleaf, and I'm sure the flowers are great in the longleaf right now. And you can take pictures of those flowers and ask me what they are. They're really beautiful stuff. But we'll also have a lot of cool plants for sale. We've been talking about it. John, we got to the vegetables, and that's really good. What else we got?
We got another popular one for Mobile in the last couple of years has been that giant red mustard, both ornamental and people like to eat that one. So that's one of those sustainable plants you can plant in your yard for ornament and then eat it if you want to.
That's right. And you know, they started growing that in Bellingrath and using it a mm-hmm. lot at Bellingrath and as an ornamental. And, you know, I wouldn't walk by the path and eat it at Bellingrath because they probably won't
right.
see what's going on. But, you know, it's
right.
probably got a little bit of dust on it that you probably don't want to eat. But it's but they're great to eat, and they're really wonderful. We do have the problem with the yellow margin beetles. John, have you got any thoughts about yellow margin beetles?
I don't see that one, and that's one of the problems with me growing plants for the sale is the broccoli is the same way. It's going to be small, and so you may not get fruit in that first fall push, but it may be the spring or later winter where it comes through, because I just plant my stuff late to avoid all the problems. And
right.
if we can get some cool weather that we normally get toward the end of October, we should be okay with that one. But I haven't had a serious problem with that one on mine. But if I plant them early, you're exactly right. Those and the loopers will eat them up.
Yep. So you just to watch. And if you're growing them to eat, it's worthwhile. And I'll say this real quickly. If you're growing these to eat and you're planting them early and you still think you have a problem with bugs, use mosquito netting. It's great. Nothing really fancy. Mm-hmm. You can get mosquito netting pretty easily. It works great. My broccoli looks great this year. Even mm-hmm. the mustards look great. It really is the easiest thing to do, and it works really well. You can actually sometimes use shade cloth. It works almost as well. But later in the year, as the sun declines, you want to take that shade cloth off and replace it with the mosquito netting. So there you go. This is a really great plant. I love that red mustard. It's beautiful. It's great all winter long on the Gulf Coast, and it's delicious. It really is just great. When Thanksgiving gets here and you got to eat that leftover turkey, man, there is nothing like putting a big leaf of that red mustard on that turkey, and you'll forget that it's leftover turkey.
That's right. That's right. Another plant ornamental that I hear you talking about is marigolds for the fall. A lot of people don't think about marigolds, and we did not grow any mums this year, but our marigolds, and we have just one variety, but it's a big orange flowered African one, and it is I've had good luck with it in the past, and we may try to get some new varieties, and you can help me out with that, but this one is really looking good right now, and so I think that's one people will really like.
Yeah, and isn't it, you know, a lot of these European plants that are classic European garden plants, they hate Gulf summer. They just despise mm-hmm. summer along the Gulf Coast. But these are conditions much like you would see in England during mm-hmm. summer. I mean, and mm-hmm. so they do great, and in France. And so this is the time. So those things you read about in magazines and see on the TV that are European things, they're going to do great during this time of year. Marigolds are, I love marigolds. They're really beautiful. Yeah. And some really cool things. Good, John.
A couple of more natives that you've you bring up is we've got three goldenrods now. We're fairly sure on the ID, but we've got the slender goldenrod, which is erecta. We've got the pine right. barren, which is fistula, which that one can spread a little bit. I think that one, and I'm not sure that's the one we have. The verdict's out on that one, but that one was a local one. It's not the monster, but it's and I don't see it spreading in my pots, you know, sending out a lot of rhizomes. But if you're worried about that, stick with the erecta, and then the seaside is sempervirens. Those two are ones that have done well for us, and they're really nice marigolds, and they get better every year. The roots expand, but they stay in a clump, and they really, really nice native plants.
Yeah, and John said marigolds, but he meant goldenrod.
Goldenrod. I'm sorry, goldenrod.
That's all right. So that's the kind of mistake I make, John, all the time. So but yes, goldenrods are great, and we just had a discussion. Don, you can stick your nose in these guys, and they won't give you allergies. Right. Goldenrods don't give you allergies. That's why they're pretty. If they're pretty, they're basically not giving you allergies, with maybe a couple of exceptions. So it's,
Anybody looking for another native plant is the native broom sedge. That's one that talking about it. And I need to get somebody to help me key those out. But I think the one we have is just a real common Andropogon virginicus. But it is. You won't find this plant in the garden centers or the big box stores, and so it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. But if people want it in their yard, this is a place to get it.
Yeah, the color of that plant in fall is just unbelievable. It makes me know I'm in Alabama or Mississippi. It's like the plant, it's the color I grew up with. And I love that color, that orange color in fall.
Yeah.
And it is a tough survivor. It will survive anywhere. Can you make a lawn out of it? Yes. Not if you mow it, however, like everybody does. You got to grow it about 8 inches tall, but it will actually look pretty good as a long grass if you can figure out how to mow your grass at about 8 inches tall. And there's a way to do that. And
we don't have enough to plant your lawn.
Plant your lawn, but it will produce flowers, which and seeds, which then may grow in your lawn,
right.
which is kind of cool. Right. And if you don't like it in your lawn, you just mow it like you mow into oblivion everything else. If you mow it less than about 4 inches tall, it's not going to survive.
Yeah.
But it's a cool plant and a beautiful plant, a beautiful ornamental plant in my estimation. In fact, a lot of other people's estimation. All right, John, I'm talking too much. I'm letting you go.
That's all right. That's all right. We've got the usual suspects of heritage roses. We've got blueberries. Some of the fruits we have is we do have blueberries and blackberries, and that this is the time of year, again, to get those planted. You don't think about them until the spring when people are harvesting them, but this is the time to plant them so that you can harvest them yourself.
That's right. And so it's really important. This is the great time for planting all sorts of fruits. And John, I'm sure people are going to ask about citrus. You've got a few, I think. But
That gives me a good chance to mention that. Is we don't get a real big selection of citrus in the fall because, as you harp and I harp, it's not the best time to plant. But people want, if you want a citrus for a Christmas gift or something like that, you can hold it in the pot and keep it and then plant it in the spring. Or you can go ahead and plant it and just make sure you can protect it very well. These are small 3-gallon plants, so, you know, get a refrigerator box or something like that and be prepared to protect it. But the reason we carry them is because people ask for them in the fall sometimes, and they want to make sure they have one in the fall because they might not be available in the spring. And so they give them as Christmas gifts, or they take them and hold them and plant them themselves. So we do have a few citrus, and mainly the hardy ones, the satsumas, the Meyer lemons, and I believe we've got some of the Washington navels. I'm not sure that'll be on the list, but we've got some citrus.
Good. And the Meyers, are they on their own roots or are they grafted?
That's a good question. I believe most of them are coming on their own roots. But there's, you know, you talk about growing them as cuttings, and it has its advantages, but there's some advantages to growing them on a rootstock. Sometimes there's a dwarfing rootstock can make them smaller, and that trifoliate makes them a little bit more nematode resistant. And so, but I'll agree with you. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying if you get them on another rootstock, just mound dirt around that rootstock in the wintertime, and you can protect the rootstock. So
yeah, and folks can call us. Folks can call us and talk about it. I would say in general, I prefer if they're grafted, I like them for pots, and they're perfect for pots. And if they're on their own roots, I like them better for planting in the ground. And because they're going to get dwarfed by cold weather is the problem. And so you may not need that trifoliate because we'll have those cold outbreaks. And when that happens, they resprout. So you get them again. And John, what are we missing?
I wanted to mention there's a recent article in the Land Yap with an interesting title, You Bet Your Aster, by Melissa Wall.
Good.
And so we have a good selection of those native asters, both the blue and the yellow type. Now, again, with the asters, a lot of them are bloomed out by this time of year, so they're not. You have to be a knowledgeable gardener that you may not see the pretty flowers on them, but they're going to be fine through the winter, and then they'll explode next year. So the asters are something that we really try to get numbers on.
Yeah, good. So, John, we should not wait to the plant sale to have these kinds of conversations.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But it's always great to have an excuse to talk to John. And it's always great to have the plant sale. John, quickly before we run out, we have to take this break. The times again are 1 until 7 on Thursday.
Yes.
And 9 until 4 on Friday and Saturday at the Mobile Botanical Gardens. Don't miss it. John, it's always
correct.
Great to talk to you.
Thank you. Enjoy it, Bill.
Thank you.
On your bended knee, thank God, I dig no more taters. I declare I ain't gonna pick no peas. Because everything is on the phone.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch. Ask Bill about gardening and nature in your backyard. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Hey, sometimes folks send me messages by voice, and sometimes, you know, whoever your assistant is who's taking dictation doesn't understand what you're saying, and so it's sometimes hard for me to respond to those messages. So when you send me a voice mail, you know, a voice text, whatever they call them things now, just read it before to make sure that it's intelligible to you, and so, because otherwise I may not be able to answer the question. Gosh, it was good to talk to John. I wish we did that more often. Andy has sent me a question about an oak tree. Andy, that's gonna please please, let's try this next week, because we're not going to have time to talk about it this week. We had a lot going on today, and let's try that. Let's try your tree again next week. I think I can tell you why it's happening. I don't think there's anything you can do about it at this point, but let's not get too much into it. Tony says red mustard on a burger instead of lettuce is great, and that's right. Lettuce, I don't grow lettuce anymore. There's so many other good things besides lettuce, like yellow collards and red mustards and, oh, lots and lots of other things. But this is the time of year to plant lettuce, if you'd like to do it. I said I was going to talk a little bit about lawns, and I'm going to, you know, here it is. I just, because I have to do it every now and then, and I really want to do it. Here's the basic advice on lawns. The first and most basic advice is don't focus on the lawn. It's just, life and gardens are too rich and it's too wonderful to spend your time fretting about something you'll never be able to fix, and it really doesn't matter anyway. Let me repeat this. Don't focus on the lawn. Life and gardens are too rich and they're too wonderful to spend time fretting about something you'll never be able to fix, and it doesn't really matter anyway. Look, the idea of lawns, there's not a perfect grass for lawns, because lawns are just a dumb concept the way we have them now, with just one species of grass. In a place like Mobile, place like England, it might work okay. In a place, it probably doesn't work that well there either, but it certainly doesn't work in a place like Mobile, because we have so many insects and diseases. And anytime you create this huge system of just one plant, it's like painting a target on your back. And you're always going to have problems. You're always going to have problems. Sorry. But you're going to have a little bit of lawn. Everybody should have a little bit of lawn, enough to get around on. You should think about carefully where that is. Mow as high as possible when you do have a lawn. 3 inches or more with Centipede and Zoysia. 4 to 5 inches with St. Augustine. If you could do St. Augustine 6 inches, it'd be better. If you're going to grow something besides Centipede and St. Augustine, and you want a Zoysia, Empire was the Zoysia that I thought was best. And it was developed in Brazil. It was humidity tolerant, and it was tolerant. It was better than St. Augustine when it came to scuffing up. It didn't scuff up as badly. It held up to traffic better. It was a good grass. I can't find it anymore. Somebody, you know, if it's good, they're going to quit growing it. So now I think what's out there for Zoysia is Palisades. These are both grasses that can grow relatively tall. Let them grow tall. Don't cut them back to 1 inch or 2 inches. You're going to have terrible weed problems. Keep that as high as you can. It's true for all of them. Use irrigation systems only when you absolutely have to, which means several hours of watering. And I mean, you water really good when you water, several hours, but only after we haven't had rain for several weeks. So you may only use your irrigation system during a typical year 5 or 6 times. If you use it more than that, unless we're in extreme drought conditions, and if you use it more than that, you're going to create problems for your lawns. So there it is. And I don't even recommend irrigation systems, because that just creates this sense of lawn obsession, because you spend all this money on something and you think, oh, I got to have everything perfect. Well, no, you won't have everything perfect. Centipede is, if you had to pick a grass that I thought was, all grasses have problems, Centipede has more problems than most. And I'll just say that. That's all I can say. It just does. It does better in the northern part of the state. It's got a lot of vulnerability to soil issues in the southern part of the state. Just saying. And finally, grass must have sunlight. You got to have sunlight. You can't grow it under a dense live oak. Nothing's going to grow under the dense live oak. Anything that grows under the dense live oak, you probably should welcome it, because live oaks are not good for other grasses. So I said I was going to do all that. And I somebody asked me about which Zoysia, and again, none of these grasses are perfect. They're all going to have problems. Palisades is the Zoysia that is the commonly available now. I would choose it over the fine-bladed zoysias, which are a big problem. And I would choose Empire if I could, but I think you're probably not going to be able to find it anymore. And then I would say plant it and then quit worrying about it. Don't worry about it. This is the time of year to plant lawns. I will also add that it is the very best time. You probably won't have to put any herbicides or any fungicides, which are terrible for you. They're terrible for the environment, terrible for everything. And the more you apply those fungicides, the worse life is. And so if you plant this time of year, you won't have to apply those fungicides. At least, yeah, you just won't have to apply them. And you won't have to water very much because you'll water them in. That's really good. Water them a couple of times. So plan your lawn so that you're putting it in late October, early November. Perfect time to do it. Hey, we live in Alabama. We don't live in Minnesota. Yes, we do plant lawns in fall. It's the best time to do it, along with all the other things. And that brings us back to the Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale, which we just had a conversation with John Olive. Great plants at the sale. That's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday coming up. There's a wide variety of really cool plants there. These are plants that you're not going to be able to get in other places. Because it's just, if you're trying to run a business, you can't have all these plant varieties. It's very hard to do. It's very hard to do. A few people succeed. But it's just Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale. You're going to get varieties that you can't get elsewhere. I hope you'll visit the sale. I hope you'll participate with the Botanical Gardens. To clarify, I don't work with the Botanical Gardens anymore. I don't live there. I used to live there at the gardens. It was a full, more than a full-time job. And it was an interesting time, but I recognize still how important that Botanical Gardens is to your success as a gardener. This is true throughout the state. And I would say we need a gardening takeover of Botanical Gardens. And people who really want plants, who really want good things, they need to take over their local Botanical Gardens and make sure that it delivers the kinds of things that we need. Birmingham, Huntsville, Mobile. We'll talk about that more. Thanks for listening. It was a good day. We had some questions we couldn't get to. Don, it's your responsibility to remind me of some of them. Andy, remind me about your tree next week. For those who I didn't get to your questions, you call me back next week.